This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
Warren makes his way right point, tucks it for Stamp, goes right corner. Cross Ian Cole, left corner, center feet, score! It went in! .1 thousand for Steven Stamkos! Ian Cole threw it in front, but Stamkos gets an assist. And the Lightning storm off the bench to congratulate their captain. 1,000 points for Steven Stamkos.
Just amazing to share it with these guys. And it's an individual statistic, but there's so many people that have helped me get here, from the players I played in the past. Obviously, you know, Marty and Vinny. And there's so many guys that, you know, I started with. And you just reminisce, you know, like Teddy Purcell, Ryan Malone. I mean, the list, Mike Smith. I mean, the list goes on. And then you got Cooch and Hedy and Pointer and all these amazing players that I played with. And obviously the guys I'm playing with now, Killer, Paul. I mean, everyone just has a hand, coaching staff. And then you go back to, you know, it just brings back so many amazing memories, like your parents, you know, getting you involved in the game. All those stuff just kind of flash back. So it's one of those things that I don't think hits you till a little later, but just to share that with the guys on the ice, like that's something you never dream of as a kid. So for it to become a reality is pretty awesome.
It does. And wow, was that a lot of fun to witness that last night. Partner, you were right there in the building, and while it wasn't a one-timer that we typically see from Steven Stamkos,
no. Nor in the power play, which you had asked me. I said, if I were a betting man, I would say in the power play. Nope.
But sometimes that's just how it goes. You're not going to apologize for picking up points or
nope.
How
second
it looks.
Assist, he doesn't care.
He does not care, and it was great to see. And, you know, something I had said to Eric on the last call was that it was pretty cool to witness, but it's also kind of neat to see him do it with one team. And
yeah.
In an era where free agency is a big deal, especially guys who get older that play in a salary cap world, the business side isn't always kind, even to the greatest of players. You know, the saying goes, if Wayne Gretzky can bounce around a little bit, then anybody really can. So
I think
to see
the number
is great.
Yeah, I think the number that I saw, he was the 95th player to do it. Bergeron was 94th. And the 48th to do it with one team. Now, Gretzky did it with one team and then subsequently went on to other teams. So I'm assuming Gretzky is one of those 48, but that's about 50%.
Yeah.
So only half of the guys who have hit that milestone have done it with one team.
Pretty incredible when you think about it. And what's amazing about Steven Stamkos, as we are here on Power Lunch on Lightning Radio, recapping the Lightning's win last night, and also a pretty successful road trip, all things considered, as they get ready now for a six-game homestand starting on Saturday against the Leafs. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. It really does feel like, partner, and not to say that Stamkos is more dynamic now than he was early on when he was just an elite goal scorer. I mean, hitting 60 goals and was, you know, arguably the best, maybe second best goal scorer when he was in his early to mid-20s. But I think you could probably make a case this version of Steven Stamkos is a more complete player, and I think this one may allow him to extend his playing years a few more, because I think there are a lot of things, there are more things that he can do better than what we saw maybe earlier in his career, and that doesn't always happen either.
Yeah, the young Steven Stamkos, like the current Steven Stamkos, they both could shoot the puck really, really well.
Yes.
And that part of his game has not diminished at all. He flew around the ice. I think that when he came into the league, his two greatest assets were his shot and his skating. And injuries have taken a toll on that. And also, you know, he's not 18 anymore. He doesn't have the same explosiveness to his skating that he had when he was 19, 20 years old. But think about the injuries that he's had. A broken leg, a torn meniscus. I mean, those are going to affect how you move around the ice. Even though he has recovered from those injuries, he's not the same person he was as an athlete. But I think that, I'm trying to remember, the team was different. He had a different feel to his game, but we talked about like his health, right? So what do I notice different about him in these last couple of years, healthy Steven Stamkos, as opposed to the guy that was battling through stuff or maybe had recovered from an injury, but maybe hadn't trained the way he would have liked because he was rehabbing? I think he is much more successful in traffic with contact, coming away with pucks or stealing pucks or maintaining possession of pucks, which is not necessarily something you think about when you think about Stamkos. You think about the one-timer and the passing through the seam with Kucherov, and he does have more assists than goals in his career. I mean, the numbers are close, but he does have more assists than goals, and he mentioned that when he hit his 500th assist, that, you know, a lot of people think of him as only a goal scorer. He's not that. But I think the getting your nose dirty part of the game has been really evident, doing it and doing it successfully, I'm talking about, has been evident during this healthy run that he's had the last couple of years. And because of that, he's able to have the puck more. I don't know that that's going to the top of the list of like Steven Stamkos attributes, but I think it's been a really kind of subtle but important part of the success that he has enjoyed.
And I think
during this like post 2020, when he hardly played in the playoffs, he's recovered from that now. Like, what is it about his game that's allowing him to have success? Yeah, like he's shooting the puck, but he could always shoot the puck. I think he has the puck more. And he's able to maintain possession of the puck more or go get the puck.
And I wonder
if it's a scrum. Because he feels good.
I was going to say, I wonder if that's just because he's healthy now.
Yeah, I think it is.
When you can engage, especially if your lower body, Dave, is not feeling great.
Or abdominal. You know, he had that issue.
For sure. And I think it takes a certain style to want to go into the corners and battle pretty hard. If you're not feeling 100%, maybe you're a little less inclined to do that. But I think all things considered, in addition to feeling good, I think maybe who his line mates were for a certain amount of time, whether it was Cirelli and Killorn, that type of style that they had to play. I don't want to say force Stamkos to be that type of player, but we talk about Cirelli kind of dragging you into the fight. I think when you have line mates who are kind of meat and potato guys too, in addition to being skilled, I think you're forced a little bit to play that way. And then, of course, as you just said, being healthy. So you don't see a lot of players improve as they get older at his age. But I think he's put himself in a position where he can be pretty successful from now until whenever he decides to hang them up. And it will be curious to see what the numbers are individually, let alone team-wise, he ends up finishing with for his career. But I tell you what, this version of Steven Stamkos and the leadership on and off the ice and the production, because I think those two have to go hand in hand. I mean, I think you need to be productive to be a very good leader. I'm not saying it's not impossible, but guys want to see you produce. And if you're producing while also wearing that C on your jersey, I think it's much easier for guys to follow you. And I think to Stamkos's credit, I think that's exactly what's happened. And it's been fun to watch over the last couple of years because he's turned himself into a complete player. And anybody that had any doubt whether or not he was going to be in the Hall of Fame, I think it's a slam dunk. But, you know, we talked about that a little bit yesterday. What he's been able to accomplish here, it's a credit to him getting himself healthy, but also I think rounding out his game too.
And, you know, maybe it would have been fitting if, you know, that point would have come on a one-timer on the power play where he scored a goal. It didn't happen that way. But you know how it was fitting? You know what made him feel good? And he talked about it when he came on our post-game show. And he did two interviews during the game. It was a special night, but still.
Yeah.
That was good of him. He was on with Gabby in the second intermission after he had gotten the 1,000th point. Then he came on with me post-game. He mentioned that they won the game. And they had maybe their most dominant period of the season in the second period. And it was in that period that he got the 1,000th point.
Yeah.
So that part of it is fitting.
Sure.
I mean, if he had gotten point 1,000 in a 4-1 loss, I'm not sure if he would have had his biggest smile on his face, right?
No. And it's going to be fun to see what happens on Saturday. I've got to think a pretty cool tribute video.
Yeah.
And there's a chance he hits 500 goals during this homestand. You know, the way things have gone for him.
Yeah, he's a six away.
Yeah.
And there's
somebody
six games.
Can do it, it's him, right?
So we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be
especially
fun.
If the power play keeps humming along. I mean, there's a lot happening here. Power play goals in 9 straight games, one off the franchise record. And Stamkos went through, it's funny to think about it this way, because he started so hot and he's been scoring goals fairly regularly recently, even though he didn't score last night. He did in the Boston game. He went 10 games without a goal. He was getting assists. Lightning were scoring, but
yeah.
He went through that little mini goal drought, if you want to call it that, and he started scoring again.
It's fun to see, so congrats to Stammer. And more importantly, I think we can say that, although I think when you hit 1,000 points, it probably takes over the actual game. But the goal is to win the game, and
yeah.
The Lightning did that. And I got to tell you, partner, I was encouraged by what we saw last night. And I do think on this road trip where I think the Lightning are improving as a team. They're not going to be great every night, every period. That's hard to do, as you and I have discussed. But I thought there was a lot to like on this road trip when it came to how they played and how they want to play moving forward. But it appears they're getting better in a lot of areas, and they're not a finished product. But I don't know. I feel like you take 4 or 6 points on the road, and maybe one of your best periods came against the hottest team in the league and, you know, on a back-to-back. So I don't know. I don't know how you feel about the 3-game road trip, what we saw last night, but I'm pretty encouraged heading into this game Saturday.
Well, look, they hit the benchmark of come home with more points than games. They did that.
Yep.
So they finished the trip 2-1, which is important. So they're into this third 10-game segment, and they're 2-1 because they played games 31, 32, and 33. On this trip. So that's a good start, and all 3 were on the road. And they'll go from game, 34 to 39 all at home. Not that these are cakewalk games. They have some tough opponents coming in here, but there's no travel for the Lightning until basically about a week before Christmas now. They did not play well in Buffalo. But if you want to look at an encouraging sign, the problems that crept into their game against the Sabres went away in the next 2 for the most part. And as
yep.
you have said, it's hard to play a perfect game. They didn't play a perfect game against the Bruins, and they didn't play a perfect game last night as well as they played in the second period. They had to lean on Andrei Vasilevsky in the first period. They gave up scoring chances in the first period. But neither the Boston game nor the Philadelphia game was even in the same stratosphere as the Buffalo game in terms of poor play. And that's what you want to see. Like, if you're going to have a hiccup, you want the hiccup to be a brief one that is subsequently corrected. I think they corrected it. They have won 6 of their last 8, if you go back before the homestand, or sorry,
yeah.
the road trip. And their 2 losses have come against the Boston Bruins. So they've taken care of business. I mean, they've beaten teams that are near the bottom of the standings. They've beaten teams that are in a playoff position. They've beaten teams that are closer to the top of the standings. They've beaten teams that are kind of right around the playoff cut line. And they want to keep that going, certainly. So you said you feel they're trending in the right direction. Like, we have to acknowledge they took a step back in the Buffalo game, but it was one step back, and now they have taken some steps forward again.
Yes, I think that's fair.
And they played well against the Bruins. They didn't play well enough, as it turned out, against a team that is just rolling and clicking on all cylinders right now. To the point that when the Bruins had a little bit of an exhale, which I thought they did in the game on Tuesday, their structure carried them through. So the Lightning had a hard time generating chances. Last night's game, and you, I believe, said this verbatim, if not, you came very close on the show yesterday. You basically said, this is a game the Lightning should win against a team
that is
really struggling. They were struggling. They had gone 10 straight without a win before a victory over the Islanders. Trouble scoring. No game breakers to speak of on their roster, although Konecny came back and gave them a boost, I think, last night. Other than Carter Hart, I thought he was their best player, and he scored their only goal. But the Lightning did what I think you wanted to see them do, which is they lay the hammer down. And after a little bit of wobbly stretches in the first period where they controlled possession, but they gave up some chances when the Flyers had some counters, they firmly established control in the second period. I don't know if that was their best overall period of the season, because their first period against the Bruins at home, against a much tougher opponent,
was pretty
might have been more impressive. Yeah. They didn't come out of that period ahead, which again is a credit to the Bruins and how they kind of figured out a way to get through that, get out of that period 1-1. The quality of their play against the Bruins in the first period might have been higher than what we saw in the second period last night, but I'm factoring in the quality of the opposition there. But I think, and Torts mentioned this post-game, and I asked Stamkos about it, and he agreed as well, I think the pendulum really swung in the Lightning's direction when they had that long, sustained offensive zone shift. Can I even call it a shift? I mean, the Lightning had two line changes while maintaining possession, basically in the offensive zone, or if it came out, it only got to the red line, and it got put right back in. The Flyers at one point were able to change their forwards, but Ivan Provorov and Rasmus Ristolainen had each of them, so I'll call it two of the longest shifts that I can remember in all my years calling hockey. Rasmus Ristolainen's shift lasted 4 minutes and 2 seconds.
That's incredible.
And he's the right defenseman.
Yeah.
He's on the right side of the ice, so he was farther from the bench than Provorov, but Provorov as well, they had him at 3 minutes and 20 seconds. Hmm. And just to put this in context, like a typical shift, if you're into the minute range, the coach is not going to be thrilled. Unless it's like a power play where you're kind of a little more stationary and you're
just passing
the puck
around. Unless you're Alex
Ovechkin
and you play
Ovechkin,
the full 2 minutes.
Ovechkin
right?
takes a two-minute shift on the power play, but again,
right, it's
you know, you're not digging in defending, right? No. Like you have the puck. You're kind of steering the ship. And if you have to skate, you're going back to get the puck in your own zone and you're maneuvering it up the ice. You're not engaged physically. Like Provorov and Ristolainen were engaged physically throughout that shift. So that shift, take a long, borderline, uncomfortably long shift and multiply that by four. That's how long Ristolainen was stuck out on the ice. And while the Lightning didn't score, in fact, I think they only had one or two shots on net during that stretch. We'll call it 4 minutes. We'll say the full sequence of that shift for Ristolainen. The Lightning were not generating necessarily a lot of grade A looks, and they only had one or two shots on net. But that set the tone for the rest of the period. And what Torts said afterward was, we could not figure out a way to slow them down after that. So not only did you have the two defensemen for the Flyers who were out there for much longer than they wanted to be or should have been, and even the forwards, I think there were two lines that got out there. So one of them got stuck out there for a while, and then they were able to get a change. You have all the other players sitting on the bench. I mean, look at the shift times for the Philadelphia Flyers in the second period. There are guys who had a shift in the first minute and then didn't get back out on the ice until it was like 8-9 minutes into the second period.
Yeah, right.
Because those we'll call it eight guys, right? The six forwards and the two defensemen ate up basically like 4 minutes on the clock. And the Lightning, they just got like a turbo boost from that. And it was shortly after that that Stamkos got his 1,000th point, and then they were off and running. And, I mean, the numbers are staggering. They outshot the Flyers 17-2 in the second period.
Dominant.
Shot attempts were 32-5. Now, in the third period, the Flyers out-attempted the Lightning 17-5. That is a completely different situation. The Lightning had a multi-goal lead. They were managing the game. They weren't pressing, really. This was different.
Well, and you expect the team to push back.
Yeah. And, I mean, the Flyers, I thought, were more dangerous in the first period than they were in the third. So
yeah.
What happened in the third period statistically was what we call score effects.
Yes.
The second period was not score effects. The second period was one team completely dominating the other. And even in the faceoff circle, faceoffs in the first period were 6-6. Faceoffs in the second period were 16-5 Lightning.
Yep.
The Lightning went 8-0 on power play faceoffs, 2-0 on their first period power play, and then 6-0 on their power plays in the second period, which just helped them keep putting the pressure on. And it was after the 2-0 goal that I thought, I mean, Hart was good in the first period. He was outstanding in the second period. And even before the 2-0 goal, he stopped Perry and Maroon point blank. But then after the 2-0 goal, he made a handful of tremendous saves. He stopped Maroon again at the side of the net.
He did.
Remember that one where it looked like there was opening between his skate and the post? Maroon couldn't slip it in. Hagel had a breakaway. He stopped that. Braden Point hit the post. He didn't stop that, but it was a scoring chance for sure. And that's why I thought the goal at the very end of the period was really a significant one, because if the Flyers had gotten out of that period down only 2-0, they're like, we just got completely steamrolled in that period, and we only gave up one. We're still within striking distance. In fact, we rallied on this team from 2-0 down the first time we met. 3-0 feels a lot different, particularly when you give up a goal with less than 4 seconds left. And it was one of their young defensemen, Zamula. I mean, it looked like he was in the neutral zone with nobody behind him, and he tried to go cross ice, and Colton knocked the puck down and pushed it forward, and Perry had a breakaway. And that was another save that Hart made. He stopped that one too, but Colton followed up, and Zamula couldn't get back. Colton was the first guy to the rebound to put it in. That was a big goal for the Lightning.
Well, it was big, and it was also nice to see, because we talked about it as well, that we wanted to see some production from the third and fourth liners.
Yeah.
I thought they were active last night. You know, not take away the goal. I thought Corey Perry was involved offensively. And again, yeah, you have to give you a little context. You're going against the Flyers, but I feel like certain guys are starting to snap out of it and are close to breaking out for whatever that is for a third or fourth liner.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like that. I thought that was a nice goal to see for Ross Colton, because look, he's a guy, Dave, we know has the potential to fill the net a little bit. Corey Perry, you know, you've got to think the tide turns a little bit with his luck in picking up points and scoring goals. I think Pat Maroon's been close on a number of occasions.
He was very close
last night. Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's been around the net, and I think Belmar provided a nice little spark last night too. So it's not a finished product by any stretch, and I think in many ways that's what you wanted to see going against the Flyers, but you still have to go out and do it, and they did. And
right.
I thought that was a very positive sign. They switched up the D pairings, which we had talked about before, and you'd mentioned Chernak looked pretty good, and maybe this is something they stick with, because while I want to see Victor Hedman get back to being the top defenseman in the league, or certainly in the top two or three, I think he's been very good. I don't know if he's been elite yet this year, and maybe that has to be part of the issue of finding a solid partner with him. It does feel like whoever Ian Cole does play with, partner, that there is some stability and some production in a very positive way that comes from that pairing.
Yeah, we'd have to go through the shift chart to see how much Chernak played with somebody other than Cole. I think he played mostly with Cole last night, because the Lightning had 7D, so they were rotating guys. And, I mean, you look at the ice time, it's not like, if we're going to say Perbix was the seventh defenseman. Look at the ice time here.
And I think that was fair to say.
Perbix played 10 minutes and 41 seconds, and that was the lowest amount of any player, forward or defense.
Yeah.
But he got to double digits, so it's not like he played 3 minutes, right? So they were rotating guys. I think Hedman-Sergachev was a pair, but it also was not a pair. But I don't know that Chernak played a lot with guys other than Cole. I thought he was very steady last night. Chernak.
Yes. Which is a positive development.
Yeah.
And I actually think the defenseman they dressed tonight, partner, has been their 7 best this year. And you can take that comment for however you want to. But I think, at least up to this point, Perbix in the lineup. You've seen Bogosian come back. Cole obviously has been a mainstay, but I think Fleury has, you know, been in a situation where, I don't know, I think when you take a look at big picture, we'll see how this all plays out. We talk about Cirelli maybe coming back this weekend, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if those 7 stay, and we'll see how it plays out. I'm not sure if it will, but But we'll see how it plays out the whole time. At Bolts Radio, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can. Basil says, enjoy the discussion of confidence yesterday. Certain people, not just athletes, respond positively when others show confidence in them. Cooch has been phenomenal since getting the Alien's jersey. Sergei has been great since being trusted with the first power play unit.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I think confidence comes from your own success as well. So it's maybe both, right?
Yes. Like,
other people are showing confidence in you, but then you start to see results. And that'll build up your confidence as well.
Al says, last night's second period was the best this season.
Yeah, I tried to qualify that, because that first period against the Bruins, given the quality of the opposition, was outstanding. They didn't come out of it with much to show for it. So from that standpoint, Al is correct, because they outscored the Flyers 2-0. But they laid the hammer down.
They did. He also goes on to say, so far, Cole has fit in nicely. Paul continues to be a steal, and people in Ottawa must be scratching their heads. Who is this guy? Bottom six played better. No one wants to be the odd man out when Cirelli returns.
Well, that is true. And the Lightning did go with 11 forward, so theoretically, Cirelli could be added, and nobody who played last night would be sitting, but The point is a good one. I'm not gonna quibble with that. I'm sure Cole Koepke wants to get back in the lineup.
Let me ask you this. This is more of a trying to get into the coach's head, and I know that's impossible to do, but I'm asking you because you've been around a long time. Do you think internally, without naming names, do you think the coaching staff at this point knows who their top seven defensemen are? Without giving names, just a general assumption at this point, 20-some games in.
Well, there's a second question to that, if you asked a question. Was that a question or a statement?
it was more of a question than
okay.
I maybe
so
gave
you. Okay,
so
that's the first
there.
Part of the question. Who are our top seven? If we're only going to keep seven defensemen at
let's
some
say,
point.
Yeah, let's say there's seven
whether
defensemen.
We dress six or dress seven,
correct.
We want seven. Who
correct.
Are our top seven? The second part of that question is, what are the pairs? Mm-hmm. What is the lineup configuration that is going to work the best? I think that's part of that equation as well.
I think we
Which
saw
is
that
why line. They, I think in part, why we saw an experimentation last night.
I think we saw that last night, though. I'll go a step further. I think we saw their seven best.
Well, right, but what are your D pairs looking like if you dress six? Because they're not going to dress seven every single
whatever,
night.
So whatever they want. Yeah, whatever they
out.
Want them to be. I mean,
but that's an important part
I would
of it.
Say, I would say probably for me at this point, Fleury would be the odd man out if they wanted to go six. And then you have to kind of figure out the righty-lefty combination, although it seems like maybe that's a bit overrated now since we've seen some more mixing and matching. With
yeah,
guys
Sergachev was the guy who played the right side correct. More than anybody else last night.
How do you think that pairing looked?
I thought Victor had some jump in his step. I think it helped Hedman to have Sergachev with him. But again, Hedy and Sergi played with other guys too.
They did. And maybe that's part of the process too. I don't know. I mean, ideally, you'd like to play with your partner, and we think of it as, you know, you're going to play with him 15, 20 minutes a night, and you're going to be that rock, because we're so used to seeing it over the last couple of years, particularly Chernak and McDonough together, and Ruta and Hedman for a good portion of their time together. But, you know, if you start out with those guys, and then you mix and match based off of how the flow of the game is going and how well certain guys are playing or maybe not playing, maybe that's the route you have to take.
I'll say this, too. And I know for sure last night I felt this way. We'd have to go back and look at all of his different games. Maybe a couple at the start of the year were a little bit more uneven. I don't know that Hayden Fleury has had a bad game with the Lightning. Or really like had his fingerprints on some significant mistakes. Now, I may be forgetting some of them, which is possible. But my overall impression of his play this year has been, and I'm going to use this word, and I'm not sure that Carolina or Anaheim or Seattle, where he had a hard time establishing himself, any of those teams would use that word. that I'm going to use or this word that I'm going to use. He's been steady. He has utilized his skating, which is his greatest asset, but he's been very steady back there.
Yeah.
He gets the puck. He gets it out. He has a chance to join the rush. He joins the rush. He has a chance to bring the puck up the ice. He brings the puck up the ice. He has to defend without the puck. He's defending without the puck. He has to block a shot. He blocks a shot. He has to take a hit to make a play. He takes a hit to make a play. I mean, he's doing everything that I think the coaching staff would want from him.
And there's a lot to like about his game. I mean, there is.
Well, if you are going to say about a defenseman, he's steady.
Yeah.
That's a very good compliment.
And he can skate.
To have.
And he's got some NHL experience, which I think helps because he's not, the moment isn't too big. And this could be a case of change of scenery, expectations a bit lower for him, but also understanding that he understands that he needs to play with some urgency because he's at a point in his career, partner, where he's got to determine, is he going to be an NHL regular or is he going to be a guy that goes back and forth between the AHL and the NHL?
I understand that, Greg, but playing with urgency, I agree with you. Every player should be playing with urgency, but you also have to play within your own game, right? And I don't think he's trying to be anything that he's not.
No,
sometimes when you say you got to play with urgency, you got to prove yourself, you got to stick this year, this is a pivotal year, like he's playing his game, which
but
is
maybe
exactly
that urgency,
what he should be doing.
And I think that's fair, but I think some of that urgency, maybe I should have phrased it better. I think when you bounce around a little bit, as he has now, I think you do a little self-reflection. And I think you have to accept, okay, what do I need to do to stick in this league? What do I need to do to simplify my game to make me dependable? And I'm sure there was some of that when he was bouncing around a little bit from team to team. I mean, this is somebody that I think there were high hopes for this guy, you know, when he came in. And I think the ability is there, but I think sometimes simplifying it, but also understanding the finer points of being a solid defenseman resonate more when you become when you're put in a situation where you're at a crossroads. And I think he was. That's how I look at it with his career. And I think when I talk about urgency, maybe that's more mental than
physical. No, I agree with you. But urgency is an important word. Like if you're not playing with urgency, you're not going to stay in the lineup. But I don't want to use that word and confuse it with like over exuberance.
Correct.
Right?
No, correct.
You can play with urgency, but also stay within yourself.
Yes, and I think he's done that. And I think that's why he's put himself in a position to stay here with the big club in whatever capacity. Rigo says, Greg, here's a fun tidbit that Dave Randorf just said the other day on the telecast. Tampa Bay has won the faceoff battle in 7 of the 10 games. Mish time and time again stresses the importance of this could very much be contributing to the Bolts' success.
Well, they won the faceoff battle from the Bruins, which is not nothing.
Bergeron, that's a rarity.
Bergeron went 8-12.
That never happens.
Not
very
against
rarely.
The Lightning. Yeah, I mean, it must happen sometimes. Yes. Otherwise, the guy would be up around 80% on faceoffs, which he's not. He's usually in like low 60s, high 50s, more low 60s in the last few years. So that is a credit to the Lightning. They have rebounded in that regard from earlier in the year. So at the beginning of the year, they were just bad on faceoffs. We remember the first couple of games, and that was a talking point. I remember Stamkos even said, like, we're gonna turn it around. Then they started having some better games in the circle, but they were struggling on special teams faceoffs.
Yeah.
And I would have to look up and see where their special teams faceoff percentages are at. But certainly last night, I mean, they helped their percentage on the power play going 8-0 on power play faceoffs. So maybe that is a sign that they are turning the corner. I actually have the NHL media site up, so I'm going to see where they are after last night's game when they went 30-16. So, you know, basically for every 3 faceoffs, they won 2 of them last night, which is going to help their percentage. So let's see where they are. The Flyers are no longer one of the top faceoff teams, unlike when they had Giroux and Couturier.
Couturier. Those
hurt.
Two were very good, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe hurt indefinitely. I mean, I'm not exactly certain what's going on there, but it doesn't sound like his injury is one that he's going to be able to come back from anytime soon. So this is a different team in Philadelphia in many ways, but also in the circle. So right now, the Flyers are 30th in faceoff percentage as a team, 44.5%. The Lightning are up to 19th, and they're a nick under 50%, 49.3, which tells you that fan had the stat, whatever it was, they won the faceoff battle in, what, seven of the last ten?
Yeah.
And even with that, they're still under 50% on the year.
Which speaks to where they were at the beginning of the year,
speaks to where they were at the beginning of the year. Now, I'm looking at some of the top teams. Taves is having a career year in the circle. I mean, he's leading the entire league. I think he's at like 65%. So with that, the Hawks are number one. They are doing horribly on the ice, but they're doing very well in the faceoff circle. But you look at some of the top teams here in faceoff percentage, Chicago, Dallas, and I don't have that game, but that would be one of the last 10. I don't know if that was one of the ones the Lightning won the faceoff battle or lost, but I don't seem to remember they got dominated. Boston is third, and we just talked about that. The Lightning did well in the game in Boston. Ottawa is fourth. Who do they have? Right. Giroux, right? Then you got Carolina, New Jersey, and Vegas. So rounding out kind of the top quarter, if you will. Some of these teams the Lightning either haven't seen or they haven't seen in a while. Carolina had a very good night against the Lightning in many ways when the teams met earlier this year, including in the faceoff circle. But for the Lightning to have seen Dallas and Boston in three of those last 10 games and still to kind of be calling together some pretty good numbers is a positive sign. The Leafs are usually a very good faceoff team, too. They come in 10th. So we'll see how they do tomorrow night.
Hit us up on Twitter, at Bolts Radio. You know, we had, I think it was it Al who talked about Paul and just the production that they're getting. Again, a couple of goals from him. You saw Hagel do what he did last night. We touched on this the other day, but I think it's fun when it comes to fruition more times than it doesn't. The boost that those two players are giving the team in general. And basically, Dave, you've found two top six forwards in trades that you made the last year. And that's really hard to do. And, you know, we talk about the losses that the Lightning have endured over the last couple of years, whether it's Palat, whether it's completely the third line from the Cup years, or, you know, on the back end, certainly Ryan McDonough and Jan Ruta. Those are all losses that are hard to overcome. And there's a couple of ways that you can overcome those losses. And one is internally. Guys take steps in their progression to becoming really solid players. And I think we identified Mikhail Sergachev as one of those players this year before the season started, as somebody who, with the loss of McDonough, could come in and maybe there was another level he could get to his game to offset the type of production you got from Ryan McDonough. And I would venture to say, partner, being on the first power play unit and the way he's been able to grasp things offensively in terms of getting the puck on net and understanding the nuances a little bit offensively, I think he's done that. I think he's taken a lot of steps in that area. And then I would say, too, you know, the losses collectively at the forward position over the last two or three years have been lessened to many levels with what Hagel and Paul have produced. I don't know if anybody envisioned Nick Paul being the player he is right now, but maybe for him it was just an opportunity that he needed. And for Hagel,
and confidence.
Think, yeah, well, confidence
go back
for
to that
both
word.
Those players.
Yeah.
Yeah, for both of those players. But it continues to be a really phenomenal storyline with Julian Breezeway. You take a look, Dave, the last couple of years, what he's had to do to manage the cap, but then get the players back in return, whether it's a trade or whether it's a signing. I mean, look at three players that just come to mind right now. Hagel, Paul, and Cole. Think about those three players. And you know, we talked about Fleury as well as kind of an underrated signing. You know, the McDonough trade, in many ways, sounds like he was forced to make a move. And sometimes when you do that, maybe you don't get the best return possible. Myers is still on the team, and we'll see how he plays out. Not every move you make as a GM is going to be home run.
But that was also a move so you could lock up Chernak, Cirelli, and Sergachev.
It's a great point. It's a great point. So that's
that was
you have
the reason
consider.
For the move.
Yes, no doubt about it. And from that standpoint, you could make a case it's a home run too. But think about the moves he made with those specific players I just mentioned, and what the Lightning lost. It's been phenomenal, the production they've received. And as you mentioned so many times with Hagel, he did it before in Chicago. Maybe struggled initially with the Lightning filling the net, for whatever reason, or just accumulating points to a degree, which he's doing right now. But I'm not sure there's been two players acquired via trade over the last year or so who have made bigger impacts potentially than Hagel and Paul on a team that's expected to continue to win a cup or compete for a playoff spot, but also has had a lot of turnover year in and year out.
Well, the guys that have left, and they're all really impactful players for the Lightning. Barkley Goodrow, I'm going to get their birthdays here. Barkley Goodrow is turning 30 next year. Yanni Gord for sure is. If he's not 30 yet, he's close to it. I should know their birthdays by heart. I'm looking at Blake Coleman right now. Blake Coleman is 31. And Yanni Gord is also 31. So you have Gord in his early 30s, Coleman's in his early 30s, Goodrow is about to turn 30, and we know McDonough's in his early to mid-30s. I'm not going to include Ian Cole in this part of the discussion because he got signed to a one-year deal. He's played very, very well for the Lightning, but it's possible the Lightning could re-sign him, but, I mean, he's not locked up long-term, and he's also in his 30s.
Yes.
But when you look at Nick Paul and Brandon Hagel, what the Lightning did is they addressed the departures, and Palat, of course, is also in his early 30s. Nick Paul is 27. He's younger. Brandon Hagel, who still has another year left on a very team-friendly contract, is 24. So not only did the Lightning address the holes that were made by the guys departing over the last few years, they have addressed those needs, and they've gotten younger in the process. That's not easily done. Usually you have to do that through the draft, right?
Yes.
Now, they had to pay for it. They gave up two first-round picks to get Brandon Hagel, in addition to two prospects, two guys that were on the team, but Radish and Tkachuk. And they did trade a younger player, younger than the guys I just mentioned, and Matthew Joseph, to Ottawa for Nick Paul. But if we were going to say, look where the Lightning are right now, today, and what Hagel and Paul have provided for them, they are in a very good spot coming out of those two trades, not just from the production that those two players have given them, but also where they are in their career trajectory.
That's what I mean. Like, when you talk about upside, potential, overcoming losses of key veteran players, you need younger players to exceed expectations or at least improve.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave, has anybody done that more than Hagel, Paul, and Sergachev collectively?
Yeah.
Think about those three players, because Sergachev's still young.
Yeah,
I mean, I know he's played a bunch of games.
He's 24 as well. Yeah, he has grabbed the brass ring, as they say.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
if anybody...
He's gotten the opportunity, and he has thrived.
Right.
In
I mean,
situation.
I think we were hoping we'd see this, mainly because of the pedigree, but also the offensive ability we've seen at times over the years. But if somebody would have told you before the season that Mikhail Sergachev, at around the 15-16 mark, would supplant Victor Hedman on the first power play unit, what would your reaction have been?
Surprise. Would it have been? Yeah,
I think so, too. And I think it probably would have been more, okay, I'm wondering if Hedy is hurt. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Maybe is that the reason? No, the reason is, it's not necessarily because Hedman's played poorly, far from it. I think it's because Sergachev has been exceptional.
And the power play is clicking.
It is. Well, yeah. For sure.
Now, it was the second unit with Hedman on it that got the goal last night, but goals in 9 straight games.
It's been a fun story, and I think it's one that if you want to continue to be a top dog, if you want to continue to be an elite team, you're going to need those type of improvements from certain players, and the Lightning have gotten that from those guys. At Bolts Radio, if you want to get involved in anything, go ahead, Carter. Were you about to... hop in there.
Well, I'm looking ahead to tomorrow's game, and
I thought
it looks like
Matt Murray.
Oh, is he back?
It looks like Matt Murray. I saw a line rush from one of the Toronto porters today at practice, and they had Murray as the guy. So
okay.
I mean, that could change. That could just
yeah.
be,
well, I
you
mean,
know,
he
different.
Is going to be their guy, even though they've been playing very well while he was recovering from his injury. They had a fantastic November. I mean, they vaulted into second place in the division, and they've kind of pulled themselves away from the pack a bit. So when we were speaking about kind of the temperature of the pool going into the Philadelphia game yesterday on the show, and I said, you know, had the Lightning beaten Boston and snapped the Bruins' long home winning streak and, you know, beaten certainly one of the, if not the top teams, or the top team in the NHL this year, there may have been a little bit of an exhale against the Flyers, but I didn't expect that that was going to happen based on the fact that they lost the game to the Bruins, and they did want to finish the road trip on a good note, and they had lost to the Flyers earlier this year. So all of that, I think, beyond the actual execution of the game plan, led me to believe the Lightning weren't going to have a dud last night. Now, you could play well and still lose. I mean, Carter Hart might have stopped every shot that came his way. And maybe the Flyers score one of those goals in the first period where Vasi made some key saves. Who knows? Tomorrow's game is a little different. So it's not a long road trip, but I think we mentioned this, that first home game back after a road trip that was a successful road trip, let's be honest. A. B. You got a team coming in that you knocked out of the playoffs last year in excruciating fashion. They lost Game 7 at home. They lost Game 6. Could have clinched the series. Game in which, for much of it, they were on top of you, especially in overtime. A goal there wins the game, wins the series. They're on to the second round. Instead, they don't get the job done, and Braden Point scores to extend the series. The Leafs are going to come in with a burr in their saddle. Of that, I have no doubt. So kind of the temperature of the pool for the Lightning might not be like the conditions are not quite as favorable. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not going to have a good game. I'm just saying that they should be ready for an opponent that's going to come at them and be playing on their toes. Talking about the Leafs. That's what I would expect the Lightning are going to see. And if there is any kind of issue about coming back after a long road trip, long, let's say, almost a week, the Lightning better get that out of their system quickly. That's my expectation going into tomorrow's game. I may be proven wrong. When we come on the show on Monday, you might say to me, Dave, what were you thinking? I mean, that's not what we saw at all.
I never
that may be
that
the case. Yeah, I don't know what is going to happen. I'm just saying that looking at it from the Toronto perspective, this is your first crack to exact. It won't be the same measure of revenge. The Lightning knocked you out of the playoffs and eliminated your dreams of winning the Stanley Cup, or erased those dreams last year. Beating them in some regular season game is not going to make up for it. But this is our first chance to get back at the Lightning. The Lightning better be ready.
No doubt about it. And I think it's fair to say I think both teams should be up for this game.
Yeah, and I don't care that the Leafs have some guys injured right now, because it hasn't seemed to affect their ability to win games.
But they still have elite players, too.
And they have elite
players. About, you're not talking about a team here who's like the Flyers. They're bereft of talent, and some of the star players that they do have aren't in the lineup.
Mitch Marner has tied the franchise record for longest point streak.
That is correct.
What is it, 19 games now?
I do believe you're correct.
Yeah, so we're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs franchise. We're not talking about the Vegas Golden Knights franchise.
Yep.
Original six. Like, that's not some kind of small feat.
I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. I think both teams should be ready to go. You know, we talk about what's that first game looking like coming off a road trip, and they're going to have something for Steven Stamkos. We'll carry the ceremony there, but I mean,
that also can sometimes you kind of, hey.
Well, I was going to say, there could be a little bit of a lull.
In the moment,
yeah. So I understand that. But, you know, the fact that it's Toronto, Dave, maybe, you know, if it's Boston, too, those are two teams that, you know, you're going to get pulled into the fight pretty quickly.
I would hope so. I would think so.
Yeah. So I'm expecting the Lakers. Let's put it this way. I'm not going to use the road trip and the ceremony as an excuse. I think you should be ready to go when you see the Toronto Maple Leafs on the other side.
But are you in agreement that the Leafs will come in hungry?
I would think.
Based on the opponent.
I would think. I mean, for all the reasons we just gave why the Lightning should be ready to go, whoever's doing a talk show in Toronto should be saying the same thing. Should be saying the exact same thing. Now, again, where these two teams, I think, are drastically different, and it may play out this way tomorrow night, is in net. I'm really anxious if Matt Murray is ready to go. Just what he looks like.
Let me ask you this question, because I got asked this question when we were in Boston, actually. Yeah. The radio guys there, we were chatting before the game. And
Jack Edwards?
I got asked this question. It was the radio booth, not the television booth. And it was not about Pat Maroon. But it was about Vasilevsky.
Yeah.
Because his numbers are not Vasilevsky-type numbers.
Sure.
Even with his performance last night, which was a good performance. I mean, he allowed one goal on 22 shots. And the Boston guys were asking, you know, Vasi not really himself? And I said, I haven't really gotten the feeling that he's not himself. I think it's more of a function of the team in front of him. This is what I said. I'm curious to hear what you say about it. But said I feel that some of his numbers are tied to the fact that, you know, defensively the team in front of him hasn't been as tight as they would like to be. And also scoring is up. So, I mean, you look at kind of the goaltending median, if you will, like the goals against numbers are higher and the save percentages are lower, with rare exception, Boston being one, New Jersey being another. But what do you think? I mean, like, I haven't noticed really that, like, I would not say that Vasilevsky has struggled this year, but if you just looked at his numbers, you know, he's a nick over 500 and his goals against is higher than what it normally is and his save percentage is lower than what it normally is. What do you say?
I will say this. I think there have been a few more goals this year that he has let up where I would say that typically doesn't happen, that I haven't seen. So is, you know, the logical conclusion people will give you if they believe that is the case is that maybe is fatigue playing a factor. It's always fatigue, you know, like aren't playing well
with the Lightning.
Yeah, in general.
Games.
And you could parlay that into Vasi specifically. Let's put it this way. I'll be consistent with this. Have there been a few more goals that maybe he's let in this year that have been relatively soft compared to previous years? I would say yes. Do I think he's still been really good this year? Yes, I do. In fact, what's the comment I've always said to you early on, and I think the Lightning are trending in a better direction, but I felt like their goaltending was the one consistent, keeping their head above water, mm-hmm. while their other parts of the game, Dave, weren't as consistent. And that might be the reason why maybe his numbers weren't as great. I think the team in front of him was going through some issues and working out the kinks, so to speak. So I think he's been fine. Has he let in a goal or two or maybe a couple of more that he typically wouldn't this year? I think that's fair to say, but I haven't had a problem with Andrei Vasilevsky, Dave, in terms of his performance this year.
And we'll see where he goes from here after the first quarter. I have his numbers up currently, even after last night's game, which helped his numbers. 9-7-1, a 2.77 goals against, and a .908 save percentage. We're used to seeing his save percentage up in the 920s, but if you look around the league, there are very few goalies who have a save percentage in the 920s.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Allmark is at 935.
Right.
Logan Thompson in Vegas is at 920. Georgiev in Colorado is at 922. Even Vanecek in New Jersey is under 920. And then Hellebuck is having a good year in Winnipeg. He's at 931. So,
I mean, are you? I mean, I know he, maybe to his standards, he hasn't reached that level yet. But the follow-up to that question, when somebody looks at Vasi's numbers, the response should be, well, in a playoff series, who are you going to take?
Well, that's it. And that's exactly what the Bruins guys were saying. I mean, like, once the playoffs come, it's a whole different ballgame. But I was just wondering, I've been thinking about that question that was posed, like, is he struggling is too strong of a word, but has he gotten off to a slow start this year? And I guess I didn't really feel that he had, but the numbers are what they are. And
yeah,
now
and
that
like
I'm
I
looking
you-
around the league, like there are goaltenders, even on teams that are doing well, not
yeah.
Boston and New Jersey well, there are goaltenders around the league who have very impressive numbers. Sorokin's another one.
Sure.
Sorokin's at 933 save percentage and a 2.18 goals against. He had really good numbers last year, too, on a team that missed the playoffs. But, you know, some of it is the team in front of the goaltenders, too. Like, how defensive-oriented are they? And how successful have they been
Look,
defensively?
What's made his run impressive over the last couple of years has been the influx of talented forwards that have been put into the league. Mm-hmm. And I think because of the talent we're seeing, are we going to see a dip in goaltenders' numbers? Probably.
Yeah.
And maybe this is a product of it. That Vasi was at such a high level and was head and shoulders better than most goaltenders over the last couple of years that when the offense maybe caught up or surpassed the goaltending, you're starting to see goaltender numbers collectively go down, even Vasilevsky's. But I still think Vasilevsky is the best in his class, even as the talent at the forward position continues to, I think, supersede anything we've seen at the goaltender position recently.
Well, and this is switching to the opponent the Lightning have tomorrow. Like, Matt Murray is on the road to recovery, but is his position a little less secure because of Samsonov, who has been playing these games as the Leafs are winning while Murray was on the injured list? I mean, Samsonov's numbers are fantastic. He's 7-2, a 2.09 goals against and a .924 save percentage. Those are the sorts of numbers we're used to seeing from Vasilevsky, right? And he's doing it for a team that is known for its offense, not for its defense.
Yeah.
So that
I think
may
the Leafs,
be, that may be an evolving story in Toronto if sure. Samsonov continues to play well.
I think the Leafs will go with whoever is hot. The
You're
Lightning,
probably right about
the
that.
The Lightning will go with Vasilevsky.
Yes. Yes.
And that's just how we're going to leave it at that. All right, partner, that's going to wrap up our show today. This was a lot of fun, of course. We'll be back at it again on Monday, recapping what happened tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Lightning and Leafs. Should be a lot of fun. Great
all
job.
Right.
Thanks to Steve Ersnick for producing. Thanks to all of you for listening. We appreciate it. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. Everything will start for us tomorrow. Pre-game skate show at 6, network pregame at 6:30. And then we'll have all that coverage with Steven Stamkos. We'll hear from John Cooper in the pregame. And, of course, we'll talk to Mish and the Hall of Famer Phil Esposito. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend on Lightning Radio.